hello.
It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.
I haven't done a podcast in like, when's the last time, Felicia? Since before coronavirus. Yeah, I was doing IG lives. Fred. We're going to take a little walk down memory lane here. So, welcome back to the Millennial Mija podcast. I'm Millennial Mija, and I'm so excited to be here today with my old friend, Tor Crawford. Say what's up, Tor.
What's good?
Well, we go way back, and when I mean way back, I mean about 10 years. And it's been about how long since we last got to have a convo?
It's been a long time. It's
pretty some years. But we went our separate ways, and now we're back. And so I think it's really cool because we are both always have been very creative people. And your kind of journey as an artist has progressed, as has mine. I wanted to kind of just say welcome back to people because we haven't been on the air. On the air? Is it the air? We haven't been on the air for so long. But for obvious reasons, you know, like we had to take a break because shit got out of hand and super wild. But at the same time, it was like it was important for us to be quiet as non-Black people. Just like it was really important, at least for me, to just like shut up and listen for a while, which I had always considered myself to be a person that did that until it really came down to it and realized I don't listen enough. And I remember that old saying that my dad used to say, like, do you know why they give you two ears and one mouth? You know, like, you're supposed to talk less and listen more. But that has always been something that I've not been good at just because I've always been a very opinionated person. But in these times, it's been interesting to I don't know, just like examine ourselves. I think a lot of us are doing that in different ways. What I want to do first is just like, so to check the room right now where we're at, we're in the backyard. Major fancy shit. We're in the backyard with a full catered spread from Trader Joe's because I'm a Trader hoe for life. And we are sitting back here with my cats walking around. Felicia got a mask on. We're back here with Jen and we're back here with Tor. And so I think it's... I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous because I don't really know where to go next, even though I have an outline straight in front of me. But I want to do spirit checks first. So I just kind of want to like go around the room and like see where everyone's at. So that way I think that will calm me down a little bit. So let's start with you, Tor.
Lots of fresh air right now.
Fresh air.
Back here. My spirit has been up and down during this. I'm extremely grateful for the learning process and all this. Unfortunately for everyone who's been sick or lost their life during this, that's a tragedy, but from my point of view is I had to cut a lot of stuff out of my life, like unnecessary things that I was focusing my energy on that I just didn't need. And I found myself to be a lot more resourceful than I knew I was. Mm. A lot of the things that I depended on daily, like literally depended on, like I need to do this, this is a part of my routine, I brought it to my house. I built it in my house. I made it in my house and learned that you can be creative with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the biggest learning tool for me during all this, that if you can't grow with what you have, you'll never be able to do anything. Because if I give you a bunch of stuff, you're going to be in the same position. So that's been a real thing for me, you know, just with us figuring out a spot where to have it at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my mind, I want to have this aesthetic. I want to have this going on, this ambiance, you know, mm-hmm. But in the truth of it is it's the core of what we're speaking about. That's what the people want.
Ooh, you better say that. And Felicia knows.
And with me, with my growth has always been, what do I have? That was like my thing. I got all this nice stuff. I fit this role. I look like this.
Mm-hmm.
I should be successful in this. And I had to learn the hard way that that is not the case. It, you would think that, you know, A, B, C, D, all these things match. They don't. And it was a hard learning experience for me. A lot of questioning. one thing that always comes to mind is people question their faith during their low times. Mm-hmm. Who to place the blame on? Who's the reasoning behind all these bad things that are happening to me? It's yourself. You have to become accountable. You have to take action for what you do and the path you choose. And the path I was choosing years ago was a path of destruction and a path of not knowing where I fit in and where I wanted to belong. And everywhere where I found myself fitting in, it wasn't for me. And I wasn't looking at what was happening. Like, yo, these things keep happening over and over because you're not supposed to be here. Mm. You are not passing the test to get to where you need to be because you're still mentally stuck. And I found myself, when I finally took accountability and said, yo, we got to visit what's really going on. Like, we really got to see what's going on to why you are so committed to this negativity, why you're so committed to this pattern. Because it was over and over and over. And I would keep asking myself, why am I stuck here? Why do I keep going through this? You keep going through it because you are putting yourself through it over and over and over. What did they say?
If you don't learn the lesson, then you can't get to the next level.
Exactly. And what did they say? When you keep doing something over and over, it's insanity, right?
Yeah. The definition of insanity.
I was literally going through insanity on the daily. So I'm doing these same things over and over, expecting new results.
And so is this in regards to during the pandemic, or we're talking about back in the day?
We're just talking about through life up to to recently, mm-hmm. like within the last year. Mm-hmm. The pandemic was really just, not really just because it's still going on, was just, it's been a, what can you do for self? And sometimes I feel weird asking myself at this age, like, what can you do for self? Isn't that something you should be asking yourself when you're 18? I learned that I was late on the curve.
I think we all were.
And I know as a man, sometimes that's hard to admit, to say I wasn't grown up. I wasn't ready for the responsibilities that were coming to me. And I had to take action and look at myself in the mirror and really understand these tools that I have are more than a lot of people ever get in their life. And I'm wasting them. Mm. So, you know, buckling down and taking care of business has really helped me grow within these last couple months. Just within the pandemic.
I
want to
hear more about that. I want to hear more about, you mentioned something about how you had these things in your routine that, you know, you thought were so crucial, and then you re-moved things around or, like, adjusted and then adapted to your scenario. So I want to hear more about that.
After work, it was always, I gotta go hoop, I gotta go play ball, I gotta go to the gym or do this and this. And as we know, the gyms are shut down, you can't go. So do I just sit on the couch and wait till it comes back? No, I built a gym in my garage and figured it out. Meal prep, big thing of mine. The spot that we were getting meal prep from, it closed down during it. You don't stop eating. I can't resort to junk food all the time. Mm-hmm. One of my boys is a chef. I reached out to him to start a meal prep. So we got on that. We're doing that. My therapy routine. Definitely, I can't give up therapy. So it went from, you know, in sessions to over the computer. You know, you just deal with what you have. Like, I'm very fortunate and very happy for what I have. And I'm not going out looking for more unnecessary things. You know, the basics of survival. And, you know, as Americans, our survival is a lot different from everyone else. Just people in LA, our survival is a lot different from everyone else. And just being very appreciative of the position I'm in and the people who are around me who support me. Mm-hmm. And also being able to support them. I know at times my routine would hinder me from giving emotional or physical support to those around me.
Would you say because you were so committed to your own growth and you just were, like, putting yourself completely first?
I think it's the whole, the ideology of you're in this rhythm. You don't want to mess your rhythm. I'm like, it always, I'll do that a little later. I'll do that a little later. Boom, this thing hits. Later might not come, you know?
Yeah.
And especially at the age I'm at, you know, you believe you take care of yourself, you're healthy and all this stuff. But this is another reminder that every day is not promised. And you know all those cliche sayings that they're so cliche because they're so right.
Mm-hmm. And they've been said so many times throughout time that they become a cliche for a reason.
There's a reason why they're engraved in in society. And, you know, I've just been really grateful for that shift that, you know, I've been able to kick back on drinking, tons of unnecessary stuff that are just there as blinders. Like, they blind you from really figuring out what's really going on and what you ultimately need to take care of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, I'm extremely grateful for that. And I'm grateful for those around me who've helped me through it. And I've been able to help them as well.
Yeah, that's dope. I mean, I think that I think the pandemic took away all our distractions, like all of the things that we would fill our time with, because we tend to do that. Like, I know with my mental health, I tend to like take easy buttons anytime I get offered one. And I had a whole arsenal of easy buttons. That was drugs, that was men, that was drinking. It was just constant escape from my own life and like the things I didn't want to face in it. So I think that when I was like, I couldn't leave the damn room at a certain point, because you're like, where can I go? They even closed the hiking trail. Like, what am I supposed to do? So you're like at this point where you're like, either I face this or what, I die. Like, this is how it ends. And that wasn't how it was going to end for me either. I was like, this is either now or never. And I was already starting on this whole like season of self journey that I started my workshops from like last year when I stopped taking my medication. But it like this intensified it to like it put it in overdrive. Mm-hmm. It was either going to go one of two ways. So I either had to go hyperdrive in one direction or the other. And I just chose to live finally. Mm. And I feel like that that is what the season of self workshop has become for me, is just like a place to put everything that I'm learning. Cause the lessons, when you'd be surprised, like when you start actually paying attention and looking for lessons, they come pretty fast.
Yeah.
Like my 100%. Dad used to say, like, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and the teacher was already there. I just wasn't paying attention. I was trying to escape it. And the teacher is our pain. The teacher is our, that's where all the lessons lie. So that's a great entry, because we're in the spirit check. So that's how I'm doing with my spirit, is like just trying to make it. But at the same time, also like just really proud of myself every day. Like, I really see who I, and it's so cool, because this is to be able to go down memory lane with someone who was there. Mm-hmm. Is really different, because I can sit and talk until I'm blue in the face to Felicia about all the memories and all the stuff, but and how ridiculous I was and all the messy shit I used to just be, so just a mess. But it's like that full circle moment is like really special. So I'm really glad you're here.
Thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit about some local news first. So what have you been hearing about the protests, or have you attended any in terms of Pasadena protests or any demonstrations like that?
I have not.
Have you heard that most of the people that are organizing in Pasadena right now are youth?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one of them, who's Tatiana Riley, major shout out to my little homegirl. She is a mentee of mine, but also now she's just becoming a peer, because she's like a baby Angela Davis. And she's been leading protests all up and down Pasadena and like demonstrations. And like, she's the first person at the beginning of the march, like with the bullhorn. Like, she's just like a baby revolutionary. And recently, a few days ago, actually, someone drew a noose in front of her house, and she lives in Pasadena. And it was this moment where it was like, fuck, man, like, it's, you know that we're surrounded by it. You always know that. But it was just so difficult to have it be someone so close to me that something like that happens to. And we all immediately felt like very angry and powerless. But because I think because of the time we're in with the pandemic and everything we were just talking about, you can go hyperdrive in either direction. And we chose to live again. And so we like rallied together. It took us about 5 minutes to raise enough money to buy her a Ring camera. Mm-hmm. And make sure she had a stun gun. And, you know, like, yeah. Because we're like, okay, at this point you're being targeted. Like, they know why your house. Yeah. So it's like, I think that's something that I want to bring up because it's so close. It's not just in Minneapolis, and it's like right in front of our face, and it's affecting people that are like in our community. And that was just something I wanted to bring up. Like, how do you feel about that? Like, about what's going on? Do you feel like we are witnessing a revolution?
One thing I'll say is evil always lurks. Where there's positivity, there's always going to be something to push back on it. Where we're at now, I believe this is exactly what the universe wants all of us. There's a reason why it happened during this. All the distractions are not there. We're looking at it head on.
Yeah.
You know? And my biggest thing is you just have to keep going at it. I know it gets discouraging when it falls off Twitter, it falls off IG, and it's no longer a hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like eyes are not looking at it. But what you do now to continue on is what's going to build the legacy of minorities. Because when it shifts, that's what they want to happen. They just want it to be on there for this week of, you know, they're gonna be out there wilding out. They're gonna do this, this, and still calm down. This too shall pass. We can't let it pass. And holding people accountable daily for the things they say, the things they do, is a big thing. I know I'm big on that. For whether it's cracking jokes about things that are, it's not right, you know, verbiage in terms of how people speak on one another. I had a very uncomfortable conversation with a family member about that, of how they refer to African Americans. And it's hurtful because you would think that the person right in front of them is a part of them,
mm-hmm.
that they're not even listening to how I want to be spoken to, how I want to be referred to.
Yeah.
What makes me less important that you want to call me something as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me. My duty first is to hold everyone inside of my household accountable,
mm-hmm.
myself, my friends, and continue on with that. And I believe that if each one of us do that, you know, we're going to keep pushing forward. Mm-hmm. We have to keep pushing forward. There is no end game, you know, with people I've spoken to, you know, they're not seeing the results they want right away, right now. It's not about us, to be honest with you. We're talking decades and decades and decades from now. The same way with Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, what they put forth is just now going into effect. It's hard. Change is hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be consistent with it.
Yeah. It's the applying pressure. It's just that principle. It's like this like drilling away, like unrelenting. And it feels, some of us, you know, that when I was a lot younger, maybe in college, I was like really political, like annoyingly. So I had no idea or concept of how to communicate clearly. And so I thought that if I just screamed louder, then I would win. But that was never really the case or the scenario. But I had always had these desire to create change, social change, and just like be involved politically. And I always held very like strong-willed principles. And I think that it's, for those of us who have been like that for a really long time, it's like, it's almost exhausting. It's like, fuck, I've been saying this and y'all barely starting to listen. And now like it's really upsetting, but at the same time, it's like, well, finally, fuck, like now people are listening. Now people like my mom, like we both have white mothers. We should start a support group. But but I think it's interesting, like about how being mixed, both of us on either side, black and brown, but that dynamic inside the household can feel so like you're not always met with enough understanding, just because someone can. How can you change from being white to not? Like, it's almost impossible to understand how another person might feel in those scenarios. So it's like, I get what you're saying. Like, even when you're telling this person, not necessarily your mom, but telling this person, like, I don't like that word. And they're still so committed to being right, or just like, oh, everyone's so sensitive. Everyone's so, you know, that whole shit. And it's like, no, I'm telling you that this is personally hurting me. I'm not talking about the civil rights movement. I'm talking about me right now. And that has been, that communication has also been part of that, like, the pandemic situation, because you're like locked in a place with these people that who I used to, in a scenario where I would get frustrated or annoyed, just leave. Just go find something else to do. And since that's not been the case, it's put us, a lot of us in our households, in, like I said, hyperdrive in one direction or the other. Either people are no longer speaking or they're actually communicating for the first time in forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been something that I think it, it has sparked. But I do feel that we're witnessing a revolution, and it might not be like a physical one fighting with war, but we're definitely witnessing and experiencing, you know, a spiritual and a, like a thought revolution. Because for the first time, I'm starting to see these, like, I don't know, I'm just starting to hear people talk about race in a way that's just, like, so much more open to being wrong than they ever have before. Like, maybe I didn't know that. And that was just something that I never really experienced with a lot of white people, especially my mom. She was very, like, indignant in that she was right. And then until it's like, oh, well, now everyone's talking about it, then it's like, oh, well, maybe we can explore the idea that I might have been wrong. Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, mine has been more so with, who are you having these conversations with?
My mom.
No, I'm saying, like, in terms of with white people, who are they having these conversations with, of race with? Other white people?
Yeah.
Like, how can they...
So you just toss around wrong ideas.
Where's the connection
at?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And another thing, too, is where do they find their place to tell me how I should feel about something? How do you tell me I'm too sensitive?
Mm-hmm.
That I shouldn't take this way? How can you tell me how to feel? And, you know, when you tell somebody that, they look flabbergasted at you, you know, like, what? It's a real question. Like, you're telling me how I should feel about something. That makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm tired of hearing that from people. And a lot of the times I'm tired of having to explain myself about certain things.
Yeah.
I don't owe a conversation to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Same way people don't owe me conversations about things. And especially when it comes to race, you have to be careful with who you speak certain things with, because a lot of people don't base things on facts, and they base it purely on emotions, whether they're wrong or right.
That's that part. Mm-hmm.
And they're stuck on that thought process. So a lot of the times with white people, when it comes to race, I simply leave it at, you have to do your own research.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get educated yourself. It's not on me to educate you.
Yeah.
You want to be a part of this conversation with us? Educate yourself the same way they tell us to get educated,
mm-hmm.
right? When it comes to the boardrooms, and it comes to...
Or the learn English, or the this is America. Like, okay, it sure is.
You know, and that's... They always throw that at us. You need to get educated. Well, you can't be here because you don't know this, this, and this. Well, you know, take some of your own advice for once. You know, and race is triggering to me, extremely triggering to me.
Why?
Because of the relationship I had with my dad and the relationship I have with my mom. My dad's from Alabama. He's lived through the riots, through slavery. I mean, he's dead now, but he grew up in that era. Jim Crow era, that all that stuff down there where they're releasing the dogs on you, shooting you with water hoses. He had a very skewed way with how he looked at white people. That's the devil. One way, and that's
yeah.
it. That's not the truth. You can't just blame one race as the devil. And the way my mom looks at things is, my mom is from Europe. Her idea how she looks at America is it's kind of just eyes kind of in the just, well, I came here, I survived, you know what I'm yeah. saying? Like, well, I don't get to complain I. Mm-hmm. Just like when you're talking about Black Lives Matter. But everyone, no, we're not talking about everyone. We're just talking about this subject, right?
Yeah.
If we're talking about math and then somebody, but what about history and all this? That really ain't got shit to do with what we're speaking about right now.
Yeah.
So I never had a place. My dad's family's from Long Beach and the South Central area. When I would go over there, I would get made fun of for being light-skinned. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel comfortable there. They didn't make me feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
When I would go to Europe and see my family, no one's this color.
Yeah.
So I've had a hard time trying to really figure out where I belong out here.
I feel that 1,000,000%. I mean, that I think the plight of someone who's mixed is so much different than the plight of, like, the concept of people of color or the plight of the Black man. The plight of the mixed Black man is very different from the plight of the Black man. And it's not necessarily in terms of the way the world sees you, but the way you experience the world. And that is also something that I have struggled with my whole life. Obviously not being a Black man, but being a Latina who is half Italian and half Mexican, you never feel like you belong anywhere. You're constantly not enough in any scenario. And that can just, like, weigh so much on your spirit and what you believe about yourself. Because if you ultimately believe that you are other in any scenario, like, there's never one situation where you feel like, this is where I belong, because it's not 100%. And so that kind of brings us to the topic of believing in yourself. Because, you know, those internal struggles are, for me, what have kept me from reaching higher for my entire life, are those, like, internalized thoughts about myself that I wasn't enough, and that I didn't belong, or that my dreams were silly, or that they were impossible, or that no one would want to care or have to worry about what I had to say, or why would anyone care? And, like, those all come from feeling out of place. Because I think that if someone's extremely confident in who they are and where they come from the very beginning, then I don't think believing in themselves would be their biggest problem. But for those of us who didn't always necessarily feel confident in where we belong, that is kind of leading us into talking about that. I want us to go down memory lane. I want you to take me back to, let's do, like, 2009. Like, that tour. I wanna, like, the Love Drunk tour. You know Quam stay spilling. Oh, yeah. Quam stay building. You know. His team of married, devoted, scantily clad women. And I need another, like, drink. That boy who was, what was your mindset? What were your priorities? What were your goals? Like, we were early 20s. We were partying a lot. We were, like, our whole lives were just having fun. Like, we didn't really have a concern. But I always remember that we were kind of your entourage when you would have shows and stuff. And so, yeah, like, let's take our listeners, take the mijas back to tour circa 2009 and tell us about who that guy was.
Now, when I look back on it, it was the same problem, trying to fit in somewhere, trying to figure out how can I shoot up the ladder the fastest? What do I do that's going to make me successful? And with that, there's just, like, a lot of shit going on. You know, I was making music at the time. And looking back on it, the music I was making, I was trying to fit what I thought worked.
Be more specific about that.
In terms of songs or topics. The way I dress, I mean, I've always kind of gone from baggy to more fitted, but it's been the same type of streetwear look, Jordans, because that's what I'm ingrained in. That's where I come from. Mm-hmm. Like, streetwear, that's always been a part of my thing. you know, I would go from like, oh, well, let me try the polo. They're a little bit too chubby. Don't really look right. You know, let me put on the polo boots.
I specifically remember one New Year's where you had on a Burberry button-up shirt.
Man. And then,
I was going to make you do like a speed round of looking at all your old outfits and like make you caption them. But no, I'm not going to do you like that. So give us more
corn nut outfit.
Give us more about your mental state, your priorities. Like you said, you were really concerned with fitting in. And also, like, I like what you said. First, what I like specifically is honesty. And that's what this podcast is basically based on. It's just like, I'm only going to talk to somebody who I know is going to either keep it 100% real, because that's what I'm going to do. And that's where the value is in the conversation. And so when you say what was going to make you the most successful, the fastest, like, explain a little bit more around that.
If this music is popping, let's figure out how we can try to make this, but let's do it with our own sound. But that doesn't work because you're trying to do something that's already manufactured, so you're going to sound like that. Mm-hmm. So bouncing back and forth with that, well, what's going to work? What's going to work? Well, this is working. Oh, well, the formula's there. Yeah, it should work, right? Mm-hmm. Nah, it doesn't work because you're not being authentic.
Mm, that part. That's the secret ingredient that people don't realize off the top.
And, you know, like when somebody's talking about their dreams and all the things that they want to do, usually when somebody shoots you down, you know, being authentic or sticking to your roots, they're just putting their fear on you. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And I had a hard time differentiating from that to be like, nah, you know, that's your pedal. Like, that's your own shit. That ain't really got shit to do with me.
Yeah.
Because when I was sticking to doing what I was doing, I was moving, I was motoring. I was at my own speed, doing my own shit. And I knew that feeling. When I got away from it, I was always trying to attain that feeling, not being myself, thinking it was going to come back, if that makes sense. And it doesn't. If I got such and such in my ear over here saying, you should do this, such and such saying, you should do that, I'm getting pulled in all directions. My core is right here. Mm-hmm. When I'm centered, all this other stuff, it don't even matter. It just goes right through me. But I was allowing myself to get pulled everywhere. And that's no one else's fault but my own. That's my responsibility to know where I fit in, what's authentic to myself and what's not. Mm-hmm. And I got so caught up just doing a bunch of shit or trying to be a part of something or trying to be with these people. Let me do this, do that. And then when you're stuck with the results, you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Like, really, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, yo, I'm out of money. I'm this. I'm getting caught up with it.
You can't figure out why it's not working the way you planned it out to.
And you want someone to blame. I always wanted someone to blame.
Do you know who you were blaming at that time?
Everyone else but myself.
Mm.
Anyone else who happened to be in direct contact with me. Mm. You know that. I probably blamed you a bunch of times about stuff. Fuck, you know, you're getting wasted. You lose your shit. Ah, man, who was with me last? It's your fault you didn't look after me or you did it. Like, I look back on it and I'm like, what?
Like, no, like, man, you know what? That's so, like, oh, that resonates so deeply with me, because taking responsibility for yourself, like, that was a lesson that I learned recently. Like, legitimately recently in the last 3 years, maybe. And it was such a foreign concept to me because, again, like you said, like, you are looking for someone to blame because you don't want to be the person. You don't want to be the reason why your life sucks. But there's never anyone else's. It's never anyone else's fault but your own. I get that, man.
And I'm waking up hungover all the time, and all my money's blown, and I'm looking around like, fuck, what the fuck is going on? And like, it's going on week by week by week by week by week. Years just start passing. Shit just starts flying by. Friends are having kids. Families are getting started. And what's cracking on Friday? You know what I'm saying?
Yo.
And you're sitting there and it's ain't nothing cracking because everybody's growing up.
Mm-hmm. Except me.
Except me. I'm just looking to have some money in my pocket to get some fresh gear, some drink, food after that, and figure the rest out.
Short-sighted.
Like that, you're going nowhere. And you're going nowhere extremely fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I always knew that. Like, I used to lie to myself a lot.
Mm.
By this age, you're going to be doing this, and this. You're going to stop drinking at this age. You're going to be vegan by this age, this, and this. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Who's to even say you're going to make it to that age? Why don't you just start now? And when I finally started accepting my flaws and my responsibilities, things started changing.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is rooted in trauma of why I keep doing this over and over. Why am I doing it with these people? Who do they remind me of?
Mm. And what exactly would you say that the role, because I know what role it played for me. What role did alcohol play in your life? Like, what was it that you were trying to escape from?
Everything.
You're like just, you said the trauma. Like, was it parent related? Was it like
physical, mental, sexual, all three?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's hard to hear from a man to say that for a lot of people. It's all three. You're trying to drown all three.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go away. They do not go away. They get stronger.
Yeah.
The more you drink, the more my panic attacks, my demonic dreams, they just got stronger and stronger and stronger. To it just gets to the point where it's like, yo, I cannot take this anymore. This is too much. Like, I don't want to go to sleep no more. You remember, I was always up till 5-6 in the morning. That was my lifestyle. Sleeping till the afternoon. For what? To hide?
Yeah.
To hide from something that only you can deal with.
Yeah. The, I think the journey to get there, like, we're not going to talk about that yet, but where the journey to get there is so much harder than, it's so much easier, rather, what I'm trying to say, it's so much easier than the pain I was in when I was living like that. Because at least you have something to look forward to. But when you're in it and you're, like, living that way, and I'm speaking from my own experience, then you just, like, it's like this hamster wheel of misery. Like, you're choosing misery. You're choosing to be miserable. Because ultimately it comes down to what we talked about, was that self-esteem of I'm not even worth the time or the effort that it takes to live better. And so when you kind of came to that, oh no, I'm doing too much. I go too fast. Okay, second question. So a side note. So we're still in like whatever year. We're in 2009. 2010 hits, then 2011. And something that I need to bring up is, I had a picture that I was going to show you, but I can't find it right now. It's a picture of us, all of us on my birthday, my 23rd birthday at Maple Bowl. And we were at Maple Bowl, and that was the day that I found my dad. And so there's this picture, and I kind of like had a moment when I was showing Felicia, because I was looking at it and I was looking at my face, and it was like that girl that's in that picture. She like died a few hours after that picture was taken. Like, that girl did not exist anymore at all. And it was such a painful time in my life that that was where I think it, because I was already kind of partying, but that was where I just went completely downhill. And that pain just became too much to bear. And so it was a lot of the, you know, self-medicating with the alcohol and things like that. But I want to ask you, what do you remember about that day?
Man, I remember when you got the call and we went over, and like, I vividly remember your dad's Audi and the emotions on your face and me not really knowing how to comfort you as a friend. You know, you can know every word to console somebody, to think that you make them feel better, but it just doesn't. And I remember seeing that when you watch somebody, like when they're sobbing, those words, they're just, and then I remember I was like, you just have to hold her. Because I remember when my dad passed away, I just wanted somebody to hold me for a quick second. You know what I'm saying? But there was nobody to hold me, because in my family, that's not how you show emotion.
Yeah.
So I remember the day my dad passed away, those two images instantly going like this, and really looking at it that in that moment,
I want it to be you because I want to be consoled, you know? And you think about that, like, a weird thing in my head, I always try to picture, how am I going to react when one of my parents is passing away? How do you prep yourself for that? We prep ourselves for everything else. You can't. And I still can't tell somebody how to prep. I can't even tell them all the emotions that happens.
It's impossible.
My dad passed away in 2013, and I still have a hard time with it. Just like you said, you know, when I hit that roller coaster, there's no brakes on it.
Nope. I remember when I heard that your dad died, and we weren't talking, but I had this overwhelming need to hit you up, and I did, because I just, like, the day that my dad, like, I found him, it was like everything went in slow motion after that. I remember, like, me calling you guys, and I don't even know if words came out of my mouth, and you guys came, and they got him, and they took him in the ambulance, and then we got in the car, and you guys took me to the hospital, and you stayed with me until my family got there. And when I heard that your dad died, it was like, it hit me in a way where I was like, I have to say something, just because I'm not sure I would have been able to get through those moments without you, especially because I remember even after that, you know, you guys threw me a party, like a birthday, because that happened on my birthday. So basically, it's very easy for me to say that the rest of my life, my birthdays have sucked, like, just period. But I'll never forget the way I felt held in those moments, like, after, like, we had this support system that was so very family-like, and I am not sure that I would have emotionally been able to, like, move forward had I not had that, like, it was somewhat of a safety net in that moment, and I just remember that being really, like, one of the only things I had, because I don't have much family support. So having those friends in that moment really just meant a lot to me. And it's something that I always, like, look back on, like, that I'm grateful for. And so I wanted to just, like, talk a little bit about that, because I know now we have that in common. Like, once your parent dies, you're, like, in this club that you never wanted to be a part of. Like, you can hear it from someone else and be like, I know that. I know you, and I don't even need to know you. What was that like for you? Like, because you had a complicated relationship with your dad in terms of not always seeing him every day, you know? So what was that like for you losing him?
The emotions are still, it's sometimes hard to grasp on them, because a lot of his life lessons are playing out now. Mm. As a black man in America, I'm extremely grateful for that. But a lot of the lessons I should have learned from him, they crippled me. Same time my dad is passing away, and you know this, baby, the person I was seeing at the time is about to have a baby after this. So my world is, it's like a world. It's like, there's life, there's death. It's,
yeah.
How do I comprehend? I couldn't. I could not.
Yeah.
I had to suppress it. First thing I did after my dad's funeral, me and my boys, we hopped in the car and went to go drink. There was a bottle in the car. I think I was drunk less than 10 minutes after I left.
Numb it. That was what I did.
And that's literally all I did for the next, well, heavy, those next 3-4 years. Every weekend, during the week, it was Monday through Sunday, you know. It's LA, it's something to do every night.
Yeah.
I was there, I was gonna be there. I was gonna figure it out. I was gonna get out, I was gonna be out there. I gotta have my people around me. They're giving me love. You know, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you go right back to reality with those feelings.
Mm-hmm. So the sun is very judgmental, and it brings a lot of, whew, a lot of heaviness.
So I tried to run every day with that. I tried to buy everything I could to...
That's one of them, the coping mechanisms.
To make me feel better, to make me be like, yo, I'm good, I'm bouncing back. You know, I'm feeling good. Every morning, you sit with those same feelings, and my whole world was like collapsing in front of me. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that could go wrong was going wrong, and still I needed somebody to blame. But I was bringing everything that was coming on. The stupid shit I was doing, whether I was selling weed or doing this and that and fucking around with these people, it was just negative results all the time. Mm-hmm. Over and over and over. Get robbed by somebody who I consider one of my good friends.
Damn, Tor.
And still, the only person I have to blame is myself. To take the responsibility to grow up and understand that. But yeah, that time was, the times when I sit back, I'm like, damn, how did I make it through that? I blacked out a lot.
Yep, that was one of the, do you remember the fact that this is so toxic and crazy to me? So I remember they kind of tried to do like a low-key intervention with me at DPL one time because they were like, you drink too much. Like, we see you on my, not MySpace, oh God. we see you on Facebook every weekend drinking, like you be doing too much. And then I ended up, in order to like make myself feel better, because I'm the queen of like lying to myself. I wrote a whole poem about us going out and blacking out. And you probably don't remember this. I wrote a whole poem about it. It like basically flossing it, like trying to make it like flip it into something positive. Like, oh, well, I do what I want and you can't judge me. And then like you guys were like, this is my favorite poem you ever wrote.
Resignated.
Yeah.
I'm doing it every day.
But it's because that was something that I was going to bring up about us kind of like co-signing each other's bullshit. Because we were all in pain in some shape or form. Maybe it wasn't the same kind, but we were all trying to, like, you know, like, numb something. And that, around that time, like, I would have never been able to conceive of the life I have today, not because I live in a mansion, but because I actually have, like, love for myself. And that was something so far of a concept away from me back then that my question is, when did that transition start for you from going from that, you know, way of life to, you know, finding yourself or wanting to?
I've always wanted to find myself, but I never had the courage to find myself.
Yeah. To do the work it takes.
I finally started going to therapy last year. Mm. EMDR to deal with all the trauma. Mm-hmm. My idea of trauma, from what I grasped, was if you're not getting shot and you don't...
Same.
You're not gangbanging, you're not selling crack, running from the cops every day, what you complaining about?
Exactly.
Physical trauma, sexual trauma.
Neglect.
Everything down the line. I am... a tin hut for every one of those in that line, just like a majority of minorities are. I never saw anybody who made going to therapy look cool. I can name a handful of people who made smoking weed look cool, mm-hmm. carrying a gun look cool, wearing a gold chain look cool. I can numerous people who made me want to do all that stuff. Foolish stuff. But nobody made therapy look cool. Mm-hmm. She challenged me. Get your shit right. Or this is... No. When somebody cares, they're going to challenge you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to hold your hand through the bullshit.
Or co-sign it.
Because they're just going to... look, and especially coming from somebody who's doing the work themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm complaining. Oh, man, I want to deal with this. We'll get your ass up and go do it.
Yeah.
The day I stepped into therapy, my life changed. to be able to share the trauma and to work through it. You try to prepare yourself for that day. You know, I'm sitting there, my hands are sweating. I don't know, how do I start this conversation? I just said, this happened to me. It's like, yeah. All right, well, hold on. Don't tell them everything right now, you know?
Yeah. Start worrying about how they're going to look at you. It becomes this, like, weird ego thing. Like, you got to do all of that, though, so you can get in.
These people are there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for me, I got a male therapist, and my therapist is also a person of color. Not everybody hits a home run their first time in therapy. I've heard nightmare stories.
Yeah, bad ones.
So luckily for me, it was kind of like the limo ride. You know, like I got in the fancy limo, and it's like, all right, well, we're going to work through this. High class. When I started working on myself, it's like everything just starts to align. Yes. And like, I'm a big preacher about that, of when you start shutting off things you don't want in your life, everything that you need is going to come around,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to value yourself.
Yeah.
And you're not going to allow yourself to mess around with these people, these type of situations. It's as easy as that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I can give everybody that I can give everyone that criticism, but I wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
And it made me learn that I'm okay.
Was there something that happened, or a specific? So it was just like the relationship that was like
the relationship was going to shit.
Mm. And so then it kind of became like this: either fix it or is gone.
I was doing my same old thing of I want to hide from everybody.
Mm.
We need to work on this. Now I'm gonna just hide. I'm gonna go over here and do my thing. You can't find me. Come find me. If you find me, don't. I'm not coming out. Type shit. I run and hide. Mm. And in a lot of situations when I'm uncomfortable, I want to run and hide.
Yeah.
It was either run and hide or I want to get faded to feel like I belong here.
Yeah.
Like it's okay for me to be here. That's how it was with me. Like a lot of when I was going to Hollywood or I was going to all these industry things, I never felt comfortable there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, I'm a part of the culture. I've helped build that. I'm a part of that. But why do I not feel comfortable here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm around the wrong people. This is not where I need to be at.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I can feel like I need to be here is I can barely talk. I'm out of my mind. When I told myself, I was like, yo, you don't need to be there. You need to have more respect for yourself and start going to the places and doing the type of things for self.
And places where you don't have to get drunk just to stay there.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this like where we're at right now. A year ago, I would be drinking because I wouldn't feel comfortable mm-hmm. to be myself.
Yeah.
I finally feel at home in my body.
Mm.
Like the last time I drank, I looked at it and I went, it's not doing it for me no more.
Yeah.
I don't need that high. That high don't get me high no more. This just hurts my stomach. And I'm going to probably wake up late tomorrow because I've been drinking. That's when I knew. That was my coming. Then I was like, yo, you're here. You're here.
Mm-hmm.
To have that type of power,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it scared me because I was like, yo, like, I'm finally able. You can't talk to me that way. You can't make me feel like that. You can't say that to me. Yes. I'm not going to stand for that no more.
Mm-hmm.
I was always the person where no matter what you said, whatever, I was going to clap back at you. I was going to crack a joke and I was going to get to your core.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
That's how my daddy used to treat me. Talking shit, you round, rotund, you all sugared up, you all this, and this, and the thing. I learned that, all right, verbal.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be out here punching everybody.
Verbal assault.
I'm going to verbally assault you, but I'm going to do it at a whole different level to really get at your core. So if I knew you and I knew your problems, I knew how to hurt you. Because I was like, yo, if it's happened to me, they need to feel that hurt.
Mm. Yep.
And all I was doing was projecting my hurt on other people and making people not like me. Who wants to hang around somebody who just degrades them all day? Besides other people who degrade each other.
Or, well, for me, it was about trying my hardest to pretend like these things didn't bother me because having feelings was whack. Like, if you got your feelings hurt, you lost.
you're not strong. Mm-hmm. The strongest thing I ever did was go to therapy.
That's the realest thing. We can end the podcast now.
That's my strength. That's when I can look at somebody who, I see so many kids out here who embody what I was. Mm. Spending money on expensive shoes, spending money to belong. Mm. You already belong. My brother, like you are part of this culture. This is ours. You don't have to put all these shiny things on to be at home. You are at home.
Yeah.
Because everything that these people sell and mimic is because of you. When I finally learned that, it was damn, this is a cheat code. Like, I unlocked this. I don't need all this shit. I can start saving money. Mm-hmm. But that was me becoming me, who I wanted to be. And that took 32 years.
I'm right here with you.
And I feel like I'm way behind. Like, I'm way behind on a lot of life lessons, a lot of things. Like, I feel like shit, I got so much catching up to do, but I'm here.
Mm-hmm. You finally in participating in the...
I'm participating in your
own life.
In the right way, in changing the narrative mm-hmm. as a Black man in America with trauma. Mm-hmm.
That you saying that, it's like, I hadn't realized that you were there. I knew that you can look at you and see that you're a different person, but I didn't, not ever hearing it from you and sitting here with you is a whole different experience of what I perceived. Just by, you can clearly see that you're doing great, but to know that it's not just the pictures is like, that's really where the change really occurs.
I think that's a reason why I'm not active on IG like that. Like, it's so easy to front and make everything look like a Cinderella story. Mm-hmm. When those people are not putting in the work, they're just doing something to lie to you, lie to themselves, you know? So when I sit down, I can actually be like, all right, let me tell you about the stuff I am doing. Mm-hmm. Come see me in real life, you know, come see us. It's work.
Yeah.
Like, every single day it's work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop. Like, a happy photo, that doesn't, it doesn't bring everything to the point, because mm-hmm. it's still a work in progress. Like, I'm a work in progress every single, to the day I die, I'm going to be a work in progress. And I know people, how they look at therapy and they look at trauma is that, well, I'm going to just go for a little bit. I got it. I feel good. Man, this is the rest of your life. It's like going to the gym. If you stop going to the gym, those bad habits come back. Mm-hmm. That body disappears. So you need to do it for the rest of your life.
Well, it's like putting your umbrella away, like, you know, just because you feel dry, but it's still raining. Like, this is a tool. You have to keep doing it. Like, that work is so, for me, it's like some days it's minute to minute that I'm like fighting to not go back to old ways, or like just old coping mechanisms or ways, like, I feel uncomfortable in the situation. Let me, any of the A, B, C, D things we all just said that we do. Like, and even like coming to terms with the realization that the only person responsible for your life is you, is basically like, once you get there, then your life starts. Mm-hmm. That, because I would say I was not really living, because I was doing the blame thing, and I was doing the like shame guilt spiral of like, I want to be doing the envy, like, you want to be doing better, but you're also not even really sure what you should be doing to get better. And it just feels like, oh, well, everyone has more than me. And like all this anger and hatred that you just like, it just festers, it like metastasizes like a tumor, and it just gets bigger and bigger until it's your entire life. But like, that's where, for me, the season of self thing. So you remember I used to take Adderall, and then it went from Adderall to Lamictal to, it was like, it had piled up all these psych medications, because every time I would go into the doctor and tell her about whatever was happening in my life, it was just another prescription that got written. And because I wasn't participating in my life for so long, I just, well, she's a doctor. She knows what she's doing. This is what I need to do to be okay. And then I kind of woke up and looked around and was like, I have no control over my life whatsoever, and this is like rock bottom. So I need to figure this out. That's when I decided to basically detox. But I had no money to go to rehab. I had no, like, resources to do anything like that. But all I had was this backyard and Fred right there by my side right now. And I came out here every morning and I just, like, I would say spiritually fought every day to not just give up. And you know what I mean when I say that. I mean, end it all. And when that, every day that it was like, when the realization happened and I started like, okay, I choose to live, like I'm gonna choose life now. It was like every day, like just a little bit more I would grow. And at the point that I'm at, I'm like, good, like at least right here, right now, you feel me? I'm like, I feel so proud of this little stump I've grown for myself that it's like with the Season of Self workshop that Jen attended, it has been like a way for me to, my dad used to say, the only way to keep what you've gained, the spiritual principles that you learn to be true, is by giving them away to another person. And this podcast has become that for me. So these conversations that I have with people, I'm not interested in your favorite color, and I'm not interested in shit like that, because that doesn't help anyone.
No.
Like, it just doesn't serve the world in the way that I know I'm meant to, and I know you're meant to. And so I want to talk a little bit about your projects and like creative stuff, because you and I have always been like the more like artsy creative people in the little crew. But I remember always coming to your house and you'd be on Nike Talk like trolling people, and then like, oh, you were the first person that ever showed me who Drake was. I remember it was like on a YouTube video and he's like, check this out, and he's like, he was like Wade from Kim Possible. He's like always in front of his computer, like. And he showed me Drake for the first time, and I remember that was around the time when you decided to start rapping. And then it just kind of progressed from there. So how did you go from doing music to tell us now what you're doing and kind of how that transition happened?
What I was doing with music and in my growth is what I needed to get here. To, first of all, understand what goes on out here. And get to the realization of, yo, music ain't really, might not be what I really thought it was, or as passionate as I thought I was for it. Because it got to a point where I was like, I'm not even interested in it. As I started to grow, as I started to get away from certain things and certain people, I was like, yo, this shit I'm rapping about, or this shit that I think is the end all be all, it's not.
Yeah, this ain't it.
Regardless if you're good at it or not, like sometimes these things just don't stimulate you anymore. Like drinking or like smoking, it stopped stimulating me. Like the purpose for it wasn't there.
Mm.
I felt like I wasn't given something that could help someone else grow.
Mm-hmm.
That I was a part of the problem. The stuff that I'm rapping about, or the stuff that I think people like, it's a problem, and I'm feeding that to my own community.
Mm. Yeah.
So between, I think after 2015, I was just kind of like, yo, I'm kind of done with this. You know, I'm sitting there trying to figure out, well, what do I really want to do? What else am I interested in? And bullshitting here and there. Exceed All Expectations was always something that was at my core. It was always something that was branded on my music. It was always something that I believed in,
mm-hmm.
regardless of music or not. So I'm opening up my laptop about a year ago. I'm just kind of looking through stuff, you know. Looking through old designs, looking through stuff. I'm like, that's not bad. You know, this is stuff from like 2013. I told myself before I started a brand, it couldn't be any cookie cutter shit.
Mm-hmm.
No random photos, no random stuff that you just think that's going to sell to people. The number one thing about my brand is it's people first.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clothing, it's not t-shirts, it's not any of that. It's the people first, it's the stories, it's the growth. That is what makes the brand. Without the people, without the work being put in, there is no brand. Mm-hmm. I had to start doing the work before I could start the brand.
What did that look like?
Sitting with myself and asking, do I want to be a part of the problem? Do you want to be a cookie cutter? Do you want to be out here chasing the dollar? Mm. Do you want longevity? Or are you just trying to get paid? Are you just trying to get IG likes? Are you just trying to be a part of the community? I'm not. I don't care about likes, who's wearing it, that's popular, anything like that. If it resonates with you.
Mm-hmm. Does it mean something?
Does it mean something to you when you put that shirt on? Are those your values? Mm. When I put my shirts on, those are my values. I know where I was expected to be in society. Every day I exceed that. I'm still alive. I'm 33. I'm still alive. I'm still out here. I'm still getting educated. I'm still learning. I could have stopped a long time ago. So from where I look and everything I see nowadays in terms of fashion, it's I don't know what I'm kind of like, what the fuck is going on? It's like it's either you're spending $10,000 on some Louis, or you know, you're messing with something because such and such is wearing it. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you? That was hard for me to sit with. Because I had to ask myself, yo, is this something you're really going to be invested in? Not just invested in a brand. Are you invested in your own life?
Mm. So it was like almost a metaphor for your own life. Like reinvesting in something that means something as opposed to some bullshit you were doing just because you wanted to make a dollar.
The slogans I use. No ego, all work. Zero limitations. Is that how I go about my life? Like, I have to ask myself that before I put a product out. Do I live by these words?
Do you walk the walk?
Do I walk the walk? Like, I'm not trying to sell somebody something. Mm-hmm. If anything, this is for me.
Yes.
This is for me. If it resonates with you, let's roll. Mm-hmm. When I look at what I'm trying to do in terms of, like, let's say a category, therapeutic streetwear. Let's talk about all the trauma in streetwear, in hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Why is it so popular? Let's fix the negatives that are surrounding it. Let's work on ourselves. It always sounds good to work on yourself until you got to work on yourself. It's hard. It's a lot easier to be destructive. That's why so many people are destructive.
Yeah.
When I originally started it, you know, I struggle with, I go, is this cool enough? Is it something somebody's going to fuck with? Or
we all have this? That a little bit at least.
And I go, for anybody to be a part of this, they need to see somebody who looks like them doing the work. Mm-hmm. So when I tell you I'm in therapy, I'm in therapy. When I tell you I'm doing things to better community, friends, family, I'm putting in that work. I'm not selling you a product. That's like my biggest core value, is that it's not about clothing. It's about the actual meaning behind it. Because I know so many people want to exceed the expectations that are surrounding them. And it's hard. Like, it's really hard. It's hard to just get by sometimes out here.
It's definitely a mantra. It's like a way to kind of look at the world. It's a lens through which to look at the world, because you can either, like we talked about earlier, you can go hyperdrive in either direction. And it sounds to me like this brand for you means it's like a second chance. It's like a rebirth of Tor Crawford.
It could only come to fruition when I started that path. Mm-hmm. When I started doing the work, because it doesn't mean anything without the work.
It's just
something else with another name on it.
Mm-hmm. Or another little get-rich-quick scheme or whatever.
Another logo with nothing behind it. Mm-hmm. I want people to be proud to put that shirt on. when you clock in 18 hours in a day to get that check to get by, because somebody thinks that you're from this area, you can't succeed, you're at this level. Nah, I'm gonna exceed that far beyond anything that you can think I should be a part of.
So it's way more than a t-shirt, obviously. So when did it move from the t-shirt, or was it always the plan to start doing these capsules? And can you explain a little bit more about that?
The capsules are just the representations of people. The first two have been about people. Origins, where you come from, what you're a part of. It's about the first video is of Jennifer and her grandma. You're seeing the transition, the lineage. And the same, and when you're seeing my mom.
The shots are very powerful too. Like, I love the way that, like, in the smallest details, like the, you know, the close-ups of like the birth certificate, all these things, like with the song, it's so easy to understand the story with absolutely no words. And it's just like, it comes across so clear that it made me cry. Well, I'm also like a Chiona, but it did, like that, especially in the other one too, like with the family business song. Like, it was perfect.
Thank you. I feel I shouldn't have to sell it. If you see it and it hits you, I did my job. If you see those cancer treatment papers and one of your family's gone through it, you understand.
Yeah. It's for who it's for.
It's for who it's for. It's a thing with me is, like Jennifer says all the time, we're all more alike than we're not. It's just how do we come to terms with understanding each other? And with me, I've learned that the videography is sometimes what's needed, because I don't need to say anything. Let you feel what you feel, how I feel what I feel when I put it out there, because we're all going to feel something different towards it.
Yeah.
Somebody who doesn't understand, they're not going to feel it. And that's understandable, 100%. So I'd rather that sit with somebody. Because somebody can come back to that years later, oh, I understand. It's forever.
Yeah.
That's what I put out for that energy. That energy to be, at some point you'll understand it. At some point it'll resonate. You know, like we speak about.
And it's
about
also pieces of yourself. Like so it's the concept of exceed all expectations, but then there are these, that's the tree, then there are these branches, and the branches are like the things like the capsules and the things like the t-shirt, but the root is the belief in who you are, that is enough. And like, this is your own season of self, but Tor's version.
Exactly.
I hear you.
The top is up there. That's what we're all going for. But there's all these zigzags in there. I want to tell everybody zigzag throughout it. No matter what topic it may be on, some topics may be down the line something that offends somebody or something that's a little too harsh. It's life is real. And those are the emotions that come with it. And I want to touch all those emotions, especially with those in the community whose stories don't get told. That get swept under the rug through all their hard work because they're too busy putting someone else out there.
It's so interesting that you say that. Like, you were someone who I think was never trying to feel, because I specifically remember you would always make fun of me for going to poetry and you would call it cry night. Remember? That's what he used to call DPL.
Are you going to cry night?
He'd say, all right, you're going to cry night again. And it, for me, DPL was a place where it was the only place in my whole world where I could feel anything, and it was like not weird. And so that was why I think I just like clung to it. But for you to say all of that, it's like you are essentially being open to feeling feelings is being open to being alive. And the opposite is the opposite. And so for you to actively be putting things into the world that make people feel, it's almost like this like weird repentance that you're doing, that like for all the years of like trying to not feel anything. So I don't know, is that too deep?
It was always there. I just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
That's just all it was. Like, I wasn't ready. Like, the creativity and all that stuff, it was always there.
Yeah.
But I was using it. I wasn't using it right. And it wasn't working because I wasn't being true to self.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a musician, if you're the one who's getting put on, everyone is sacrificing to push you forward.
Yeah.
As a child, my mom always sacrificed to push me forward. Everyone was always sacrificing me to push me forward. I want to push people forward, especially minorities who don't have the voices, who don't get to tell their stories because they don't have the outlets. They don't have the resources. I have certain resources that I want to share to put people on. That's my duty. I'm a single child. I've grown up. It's me, 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 me. Mm-hmm. Nah, it's not. I can't grow being about me. It's someone else's time. It's the world's time. It's not my time no more. It's time for me to take a step back.
Well, and understanding that the more you give, the more you get, just karmically. Like, you can only continue to ascend the more you, like, you know, give it away.
I've just recently started learning that. I never used to support stuff.
What do you mean?
I was in my bubble of whatever I liked, I liked.
I totally get that.
If you're trying to push something on me, I'm straight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fuck with that.
Yeah.
I was very hardcore on what I like. When I started opening myself, like, yo, let me see what the city has to offer. Let's see what people are doing. Yo, people are doing amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All around L.A., Pasadena, all throughout California. I was blocking that from myself because I wasn't open. These are all things I'm doing to myself. It's no one else doing it to me. In terms of collabing with people, just friends who are like right here with me,
mm-hmm.
with some of the most creative people I know.
And they didn't have the blue check, or they didn't have the extra street credibility or the Hollywood connections for it to be enough.
All the stupid things that I used to think were important. And the funniest thing about that, those are the people who can do the least amount of shit for you.
Or will.
They don't have anything to offer for you because the majority of them are looking out for self.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be around people like that. I'm cool. You know, I'm not saying everyone is like that, who's a part of that community, but this is what pushes everything, the people of the community. Why are they not focused on?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones buying products. They're the ones who make things hot.
Mm-hmm.
But yet everyone neglects them. Why? Nobody wants to go to community until everything, all other options are exhausted.
Yeah.
I got to get back to my roots. All of a sudden?
Yeah.
All of a sudden? Like, you demise from the top, now you want to come back down here
mm-hmm.
with us? Now you feel like we can see each other down here?
Yeah.
Nah.
Tell me about Project Blitz.
Project Blitz is the company that I work for. We are a Supreme and Nike Jordan resellers. We put Drake, Travis Scott, a ton of celebrities in like the hottest stuff.
Drake, so it's like a stylist?
You could say that.
Or like a supplier.
A supplier.
Okay.
I don't like to take credit on stylists because I feel like that's something where you need to piece everything together. That's how I feel. I know there's a ton of people who be like, yo, I'll give you sneakers. I styled you. I put you up on game.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to pass down my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, if you're looking for the next thing that somebody is not really on right now, here, check this out. Becomes the next big thing,
been your lane. Like, I remember coming in your house and your room has fucking to the top of the ceiling with Nike boxes.
Yeah.
Nikes were life. And I mean, all of us felt that way to a certain extent, but Tor took it all the way. And you were always buying and reselling and all that kind of stuff. Like, you got into that pretty early. Like, yeah. And so that's what led you to Project Blitz?
Yeah. The owner, Andre Lustina, I used to buy stuff off him back in the day. I used to get Supreme off him. I was never big on going to the store, so I was like, yeah, I just cop it off eBay, be here in a day. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I connected with him, and also through Grey One. Grey One was one of the spots that had everything in Pasadena.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
They had the tier zero accounts, and they got everything that nobody else got. So I was able to get the European exclusives and all that stuff. So just building through that got me into that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned a lot through that. I've got a lot of harsh reality checks working through that job in terms of what you think is really going on and what you think you want to be a part of or what you think this culture is and who you think is hot doing
and this up. Culture in terms of what hip-hop culture, streetwear culture,
yeah, all together,
Hollywood culture,
yeah, all of those combined. It's a lot of dickheads out here.
That's know? For sure.
It's a lot of dickheads out here, and there are also a lot of humble people who are extremely grateful for the positions they're in. And those are my favorite type of clients. My biggest growth in being in that industry is actually me learning how much I don't want stuff. Mm. As you're saying, I had all the sneakers and had all this. The attention I got from it wasn't the attention I wanted. It's
like, because people will rob you, or in what way?
That, or people become jealous over things, mm-hmm. over material goods, and I placed material goods high on my list because I thought that's what made me. That's what made me.
That's where you got your value.
Where I was accepted at. Nah. As I got further and further away from things, every relationship I've recently made has just been super solid. Mm. And it's not even about for what I can do for you or what do you have. Mm. These are real human connections with people. And I just see every week how it's, I want through that job, and how people are so invested in it, invested in thousands and thousands of dollars in sneakers, that at a point I was just like, snap a finger, yeah, I'm down, I'll buy it. I need it. Well, now the way I look at it, I'm like, yo, it's like, y'all tripping.
Yeah.
It's there's no value in it. There's no value in it. It doesn't make you a better person. It doesn't make
you.
Yeah,
it's not going to do what you hope it will. Because it's not going to fill that hole that you have, that empty hole you have inside you that can only be filled with self-esteem. And that you can only get from doing the work. But they're on their own path, and they're going to have to find that out the hard way.
It
you're like, but until then, that'll be $1,000.
It has the opposite effect. You know, most people find themselves having to keep buying things over and over and over to feel that they need a key.
It's never enough.
It's never enough. There's always somebody who's going to have more money with you, more money than you. There's always going to be somebody who has more resources to get these type of things. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And the attention that, like I was saying, back to the attention it would attract is, it attracted a lot of negative attention in my life. I can't be mad at it. Because you can't be mad at what life gives you when you asking for it, but you don't get it the way you want it.
Mm, yeah, you said that. Mm-hmm. That's so true, because we always expect that. We always have this idea of the way things are going to look or the way things are going to go. And the only thing I know for sure is that it's never, ever that way. And sometimes it comes better, sometimes it comes worse. But you're right, we can't be mad at it, because if it's like you had to be more specific, or it's just not meant to manifest in your life in that way that you originally thought it would.
You wanted it. There's a lesson in it. If you learn it, there's always something in the negative. And I had a hard time grasping that until I started to do the work and understanding, yo, you asked for this attention, but it didn't come the way that you wanted because you aren't being who you are. Mm. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Was it hard for you to, when we say like the work, and then we say, talk about authenticity, about like being who you are. So when you started to peel back the layers, were you surprised about who you were? Or did you always kind of know that was under there?
I always knew it was under there, but when was I going to embrace it? Mm-hmm. It's like you're struggling back and forth. Well, I want this. I want to do it. You know it's not. It's like we all know what's right for us. There's a feeling in it. Mm-hmm. And I would always struggle with those feelings, or I would go against it. Like I always had something in my stomach that would tell me something, but I always would try to go against it. Like, nah. Brain, your brain knows, not your intuition. And I was wrong every time.
Yeah.
When I started following my heart and what I truly believed in, everything just, it just gets easier, mm-hmm. because you attract what you need. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what you need is not what you think. Mm-hmm. You know, like we think, oh, I got to get this big house, or I need this, this, and this. And it's like, Nah, man. Yeah. You just
a lot of the stuff starts internally before you can even get to a place in your life that you can be smart enough financially to get to your money, like to have a house. Like, there's like so much shit that has to happen before that, and that's where the stage that I'm at, and I'm like so grateful to know that one little principle, because I don't set, and this sounds really bad, but I don't set my goals before I can reach them. Mm-hmm. Because I know that I'm not in a, my self-esteem is not in a great place. So that's what I'm working on, because ultimately I want a house. I want to move out of here. I want all those things too, but I can't get any of them until I get this shit under control, because it's the foundation. So to understand the way a house is built is so much easier than, or it's so much harder to understand that than it is to just want the house.
I needed mental freedom before anything. I couldn't be creative. I couldn't unleash my true self without having mental freedom. And to get mental freedom, I had to let go of stuff. I had to let go of drinking, of spending money frivolously, just
the things that were keeping you numb.
Exactly. The things that keep you numb usually just keep the credit card going. Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah. Mental freedom is just to be able to sit back here and just look up and enjoy. Like, I could never used to be able to just enjoy looking at nature or taking in a deep breath, because I was like, man, I got to get to this place. I got to go do this. Yeah. I got to. Nah, man. Like, I'm exactly where I need to be. Mm-hmm. Even when something goes wrong, mm-hmm. I stop. Usually I have to throw a little hissy fit. But then I get there and I go, this is where I needed to be. Mm-hmm. The path is never going to lead me astray.
Yeah.
Trust the process. Like, yeah. Trust where whatever's happening is, it's right. Just wait on it. Just wait. And you'll get the answer because you're searching mm-hmm. for it. So that's all. That's been my biggest, like I'm blessed to be able to see that and be able to grasp that, to get past where I mentally was stuck on things.
So let's talk a little bit about our city. I just want to talk about Pasadena a little bit, and I want to ask you, I want you to tell us where you're from, even though I already know, and I want you to talk about how it influences you and your work.
I live in Altadena. I'm not a Pasadena resident. Mm-hmm. My influence comes from my friends. Like, everything, I've always been the watcher. Like, I've always been the one who watches and sees certain things. Like, I didn't grow up in the hood, but a lot of my friends who, you know, who I'm good friends with, they did. So I would have to go venture off down there. And I would just sit and I would watch certain things. I think that's what actually made me like music so much. Because I was like, yo, like, these stories, you become a storyteller. Mm-hmm. Which I think is, which has helped me so much to be able to tell stories like Jose's. Or tell Jennifer's stories, like, through the clothing. My friends have always been my biggest influences. I look up to my friends. Like, I've always looked up to Jose. Like, he's the OG in the neighborhood. He's the one that everybody respects. If you're with him, you're good. Mm-hmm. That was always how I looked at it. Him, Caesar, Marco. Like, I always looked up to these guys that as long as I have them around me, I'm always going to be okay. You know?
And they keep you grounded.
They always kept me grounded, and they always gave me game. Like, they gave me all the game I needed. Anything bad that's happened to me, they told me, yo, this can happen if this, and this. And even when it happened, they still took me back, and they never judged me for it. That's a genuine brotherhood.
Yeah.
I would have stopped fucking with me a long time ago, to be honest. But the fact that they've always been there with opening arms has always helped me to continue on and to continue to grow. I lean on them. Mm. I share my ideas with them. I want to put on for them.
Yeah.
You know, I want to create opportunities for me and my homies. I want to create opportunity for those who are in the same city as me. We've never had that scope on us. Now I'm starting to sit back and look, and it's like, yo, there's a lot of dope people out here who are doing good things, and that attention is coming.
Yeah.
Good attention. Like, it's mm-hmm. warranted, because we're doing things that are helping society to do better and do better for the community. Like, it has to start here. one quote that always resonates with me is a Pimp C quote, when he said, if you can keep your town rocking, you're gonna be all right.
Yeah.
There's so much to, there's just so many resources here. But I also know that a lot of people aren't always willing to work with each other. I want to be able to bridge that gap to get people to work with each other, to see that someone of color, like, yo, he's just like me. Therapy's cool. Growing up is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Being financially stable is cool. Like, yeah. these things are cool. Like, I feel like we're fed so much negativity that we think is cool. Being faded, drinking lean, doing this, this, and this, and all these things that it's like, who's going to make it cool to be a man? To deal with emotions? To deal with self? To grow up?
That has to happen. And you are definitely making yourself an example of that.
Appreciate that.
And it's important because it's, and that's why, so the pain into power has been a big, like, theme for me. Like, because we talk about this stuff. We talk about, like, we went from this to that. And the into is what this podcast mostly focuses on. Because the story of how it happened is what's most valuable. And so that's why you wanting to make those things cool and that being a priority for you, it's such a huge ripple effect. Like, from a kid who probably needed that influence, like, that's what you're becoming, yeah. is the person you needed.
Yeah. I never had that. Or if I did, I was too busy not focusing on it or mm-hmm. not paying attention to it.
Or thinking it was whack.
Yeah, you think that knowledge and positivity, you know, that's bullshit. Like, I want to be... Nah, bro. Like, that's what's going to keep you around.
Yeah.
All the dumb shit out here is what's going to make you fade out real fast. So, you saying that, like, yeah, I do want to... What I didn't have, I want to become.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't have that with my dad. I didn't have an older brother or siblings to look up to or anything like that. Everybody I looked up to, they were, outside of my friends, were people in the outer circle that I couldn't touch, I couldn't have intimate conversations with. Like, I was always yearning for that.
Mm.
Allowing myself to be open for somebody who's looking for that, I'm here for it. I'm here to help the community grow because I know what it's like to be stuck. And I see so many people who are stuck.
Yep. Stuck is exactly the word.
And a lot of times, they just needed to look... It just has to look cool to some people to be like, yo, it's cool to grow. The same way it's cool to do all this other stuff. Bro, it's really cool to be out here, like, taking care of yourself. It's mm-hmm. cool to go to the gym. It's cool to eat right. It's cool to treat everybody with respect. It's all cool. It's cool to take care of your woman. It's cool to take care of your family, your children. Be there for them. And hold your homies accountable, your family accountable. That's cool. That's what's going to help us get to the next level that we need to be at. It's not bullshit. It's not a fad. This is something that we got to instill within our community.
What are some of your goals looking forward, like, in the next however long? Like, what are some big ones and some small ones?
My biggest goal is I want to build a community center. A community center that has free therapy, a gym, and a nutritionist to teach them that each one is connected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can take care of all of it, you're the ultimate weapon.
Yeah.
We don't have those outlets. And
the ones that we do, in terms of, like, me working at the teen center for 5 years, that place is a resource, but it's a very conditional resource. It's a resource that if you have the money, or depending on how much money the city wants to give to Northwest Pasadena, which ain't always a lot, and it's conditional whether or not their behavior is good. It's conditional. It's conditional on so many levels that in the community that it exists in, it can't have conditions, because in order for us to even be accepted in a space like that, you have to be accepted with all the flaws that your environment created for you. Which is a lot of times that disrespectful nature, or the talking back, or all that stuff. Because if you are told from an early age that you're too bad to be in here,
mm-hmm.
what do you start to believe about yourself?
You're bad.
And so that's why something like that, like you're talking about, is like, it's necessary, but we need first to see that it's the fruits of that. Like, what does it look like for someone to succeed spiritually, emotionally, like all of those things? And I feel like this conversation is, like, really helping whoever might be listening to it to just get a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to maybe like craft a message for a kid who might be just like you, from same city, from neighborhood, same age that you were, in these like in these moments where you might have needed this advice. What would you have needed to hear? What would you say to that kid?
The more you neglect it, the more it hurts. I think that was my biggest my biggest learning experience, is that there's also somebody there to talk to you about it who's been through it too. I used to think being a masculine male is you work through everything, put your head down, you don't cry, you don't react. It's okay to react. You're a human being. Like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to feel those feelings. It's okay to be who you are. You're okay. That was one thing I had to really learn, that it's okay to be me. Like, it's okay to have your flaws. That's what makes you you. You're unique. I think that's what held me down for so long, because I didn't think that made me special. Mm-hmm. But that was my little gold star, which made me special. Mm-hmm. And made me more relatable to everyone. I'm here. If any kid is out there who wants to talk, you can reach out to me on IG or any way you can get in contact with me. I want to talk to people, and I want to help them through it. I want to help give resources that I have. I don't got endless stuff, but mm-hmm. what I do have to offer for my community. It takes a lot of work. You got to be ready.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be done.
It can be done. It can be done. This conversation is proof that it can be done.
It can be done.
Like, if you're willing to do the work, then you are, you know, it's like, it's inevitable that you will receive the fruits of that labor. Like, and these fruits are so much better than the fruits of the labor that you thought you were doing to be this person that you thought you needed to be. Like, because that stuff was just physical.
Stuff is stuff, and there's always going to be stuff. You can't keep up with stuff. That thing you got is always going to be replaced next year.
Mm-hmm. 2.0, 3.0.
It's always going to be something, but that knowledge,
it's eternal. Thank you for being on my podcast tour.
I appreciate you.
I'm so happy that we did this.
I appreciate you.
How do you guys feel about it? Did we do it? Okay. Well, tell us where we can find you online, and also if you have anything upcoming or ways we can support.
You can follow EAE, the brand, on IG, EAE Expectations. I'm releasing a capsule next week called Gems. It's centered around Juvenile's song Ha. If you know the hook, I'm a paper chaser. Got your block on fire, made in the G. Until the moment you expire, you know what it is. Made none of the stuff. The main part of it is, you don't be crying, and don't be suffering. Nobody cares about us crying or suffering. That's why we don't get resources. That's why we don't get shit. When I read that, I think about what I've been able to build, what other people have been able to build. They put their head down. They didn't cry. They didn't suffer. They didn't complain through it. They went through it. That's a gem. Mm. That's why I named the capsule Gems, because these are gems for everyday life, for creating and overcoming.
Yeah.
Music is in all of us. Anything that we do, we're running, we're cooking, bullshitting, whatever it may be, there's so many gems in music that we can just apply to our lives. And growing up on Cash Money, that was everything I wanted to be. I wanted the gold teeth, I wanted the gold chain, like I wanted all that stuff. Besides all the stuff that I wanted, a lot of the things they talked about had the gems in there.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
That go with exceeding all expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm paying homage to Juvie on that one.
You know what? There are so, like, hip-hop, I feel like I've learned more from hip-hop than I did in school. Mm-hmm. Like, a million percent. because the lessons are so much more substantial. Like what you just spit, like that little couple bars, that is so filled with like that's like the best of someone. That's the best someone has to offer about the world. They're like, what do I have to say? This is it. I'm gonna put it, but I'm gonna put it the way I know how to put it in my words, in my language.
It's raw emotion. Mm-hmm. It's emotion. That's everything behind it. Like that's what fuels it. Mm-hmm. That's what makes that person. Those are words that he lives by. Mm-hmm. So when I see that, and I like every time, like. Just sitting and you vibing and you just in the zone of that. It's just like it hypes me up and that creative drive just gets going.
Yeah.
And every time I think about, damn, I don't got this and this to do this. Why you suffering? What you crying about? Get to it. Make with what you got work. Mm. Because if somebody gives you more, it's gonna be the same damn thing. You're gonna want more and you're not gonna be able to do with what you got, and mm-hmm. you're gonna owe somebody something.
Yeah, that's a gem, and we'll end it with that gem. Thank you for being here, Tor.
Get on no snacks, stupid.
Hello?
It's the Mother Fucking Millennial Mija Podcast.